This indeed turns out to be the final day of Kyle Lowry in Toronto. How do you feel about that, Katie?
Well, thank you for having me. It's great to be back. I feel like it's very fitting also because this is something you and I have been talking about and building up to, I think, this whole season. So, well, I'm not going to believe anything, even though you and I have both heard the rumors and the reports, until it actually happens. I'm stealing myself for that moment. But I'll feel upset. I'll feel pretty sad, but it's going to be a bittersweet feeling. I think if Lowry were to leave in this free agency versus when we were talking about it at the trade deadline, it's going to feel a lot different. And I think whatever situation he's going into, I'm going to be very happy for him.
I think everyone agrees with that, Katie, because, you know, there are not very many Kyle Lowry detractors. There's always, everybody has detractors, but end of the day, he's been an exemplary citizen. He helped them win a championship, so everyone gives the guy his due. But I guess when you scratch the surface, if this was in a perfect world, if this was in a perfect world where both the player and the team could agree on a financial package, let's say there was a time where the player said, okay, I'm willing to stay in Toronto. Is it the time to do this? Like, should the Raptors really go hard to keep Lowry a part of the mix?
I don't think at this point, just because given what the team is going into, I think the team is basically moving into taking several different shapes. We haven't necessarily gotten a clear sign of what that actually is. Masai not signing his contract is one of those things that I think it hasn't yet helped us get a clear sense of where the team is moving. But I think at this point, if Lowry wants to stay, that's different. He would potentially take a cut to do it. But I also don't think where Lowry is at the point in his career, you know, he's entering into probably a 3-year deal. He wants something similar to what Chris Paul opted out of his past contract with the Suns to look at. It's a contract that'll be weighted pretty heavily for that third year. He wants that security and he deserves it. So I don't think the Raptors should necessarily double down and give it all to keep him. I think that they should sort of look at the returns that they'll get potentially for whatever team. And it looks like right now Miami is the most aggressive, but whatever team that is that's going to come after him.
So the future without Lowry is going to look very different, obviously, from the Raptors' perspective. And Katie, one of the things that's hard to get a handle on, you and I have talked about this many times, is just what exact stage the Raptors are at. You know, like, all right, they win the title in 2019, Kawhi leaves, but they have the second best record in the NBA in the COVID season and losing 7 games to Boston. So a pretty good year. Last year was a disaster. There's no question about it. But a lot of it was basically quasi tanking to get the pick. So they wind up with a pretty good fourth overall pick. They still have Siakam. They have Freddie. They have OG. It's still a pretty good nucleus. They have the same coach, presuming Masai stays. How close is this team to being a upper level team? And I don't even want to get into the playoff team. I know your dog's upset about Lowry leaving, but I don't want to get into whether or not they can play in the playoffs. Can they be a top of the conference team anytime soon based on what we've got right now?
He is very upset. He's not taking this as well as your eye, obviously. I don't think so. I think that they can come back to say, like, you know, sit comfortably. I don't think we're looking at a Raptors team that's in the play-in tournament necessarily. I think they're kind of going to come back and sit comfortably somewhere in the maybe 5th or 6th spot, like if we want to cast ourselves that far ahead. But, you know, this is something that you and I have also talked about too, is that so long as Lowry is with the Raptors, no next-gen Toronto team can really take shape. You know, Lowry will always be the leader and the fixed point of gravity for this team. And that's not a complaint. I think it's something that's been a reality Toronto's been lucky to have for this long. But Lowry, he's too great a force on and off court to not influence the culture, I think, of gameplay as well as chemistry. So when we talk about Raptors basketball, he is Raptors basketball, which is, I think, what makes looking ahead to this season add such a blind spot when we don't know necessarily, does that mean with him or without him? Because without him, you assume Fred VanVleet takes over. Maybe you have Malachi as a backup PG. You've got great development we saw last season with OG Anunoby. Pascal Siakam, assuming he stays, you know, like, this is a good core, and this is a core that we've been working towards seeing take over and kind of be like our full-time next-gen squad, but we've never got to really see them at full strength or full capacity without Kyle Lowry. So I think the team could move in several directions, but it's still really hard to, from where we're sitting, to say decisively what that will be.
Well, that's indeed the case. And, you know, KD, regardless, you know, in his age 35 year, and everybody, you know, moves on at some point from any organization, but how the Raptors replace what Lowry brought in terms of his community involvement, his embracing of the city as an ambassador, cannot be understated. And especially in the case, you know, of the Raptors and a franchise, you know, that is, they don't need any apologies. We all know what the Raptors are in Toronto. But for the rest of the NBA, that a primetime player embraces a city and wants to be there, and then he's gone, I think that makes it tough. I really do. That intangible thing is going to be the part that I'm going to miss the most if Kyle Lowry is gone after 6 o'clock. From the playing standpoint, at age 35, he wants to cash out. I got it. I don't even know, you know, even if it's a discount, is that the right way to go? I can live with that too. But the part that is going to be difficult is replacing what he means to the city and as a franchise icon. And I'm not so sure the Raptors, you know, I don't know how they can replace that, Katie. I don't know where the next Kyle Lowry is going to come from. I'll leave it at that, I guess.
I mean, I don't think there is a next Kyle Lowry. You know, Kyle Lowry is Kyle Lowry. And I wanted to say, can we just take a moment to appreciate, you know, that a player, I think, who has been as consistently undervalued in his career as Kyle Lowry is now the focal point of this free agency, the last trade deadline. And then in many ways, you know, this is going to make him the focal point of this upcoming season, as well as, like, wherever he goes, I think, and to shape the league. And I think, to me, that feels like a certain comeuppance and something that's due him, and that we in Toronto have, hopefully everyone in Toronto has known and appreciated, and I think will definitely come to know and appreciate when you see him, when you see a team that doesn't have his fingerprints all over it anymore. I think that that's what makes it so bittersweet, is that we're ending, this will be an end of an era. You know, this will be an end of a certain type of era, and it's exciting because we get another generation of Raptors basketball to look forward to, but we shouldn't look for the next Kyle Lowry because there just isn't one.
No, that's a great perspective, 100% right there. Katie Heindel with us, writer for Dime Coast of the Dishes and Dimes podcast. I'm Roger Lajoie. Free agent day opens up in the NBA after 6 p.m. Kyle Lowry, the big decision. And Katie, I love your point about Lowry finally getting his due, even at the trade deadline. You know, there was conjecture, and not here in Toronto, but, you know, in other U.S. centers where people are saying, well, how much is Kyle Lowry actually worth and what the piece is? And I saw some real big arguments about it in the United States. I'm thinking, how can anybody not see that Kyle Lowry is a significant piece of a franchise? Maybe he's not a particular fit for a particular franchise at any time, but that he finally is being treated as the star that he has been, and we've seen firsthand, is a terrific part of this. So whether or not Lowry moves on, moving in is Scottie Barnes. And Katie, back to the whole thing about embracing Toronto, gotta love the way that kid is all over being happy about being a Raptor.
I think it's adorable. And I think it's quite important too, you know, like this is the first top five pick that Toronto's had in quite a while. And to see him, I think, you know, for his birthday yesterday, they took him to the CN Tower, as well as the Real Jerk. So, you know, and I don't think he took that Raptors hat off since draft night. I think he had it on for about 3 or 4 days, probably now going on even more straight. To see someone like that, who we are looking to as like a next gen type of player, be that excited about playing here. I mean, I hate to bring this back to Lowry, but it does go back to him and DeMar before him, you know, and that they made Toronto a franchise and a team that is now attractive, an attractive landing place for young stars to be. And not just because of, you know, the trappings of Toronto, but I think because of the developmental system, you know, all throughout workouts leading up to the draft, players were saying, you know, they New Toronto was a place where you went and you only get better. And I think that's a huge draw. So I think wherever we're looking, our future, and with Scottie Barnes, is extremely bright.
It is an encouraging thing to see somebody embrace the city. There's no doubt about it. And I guess I hope, you know, Katie, and we don't know the answer, but I do agree with you that Toronto's perception has improved, especially, hey, they win an NBA title in 2019. You see the crowds in Toronto, how incredible they are, how good the franchise is, and how they're treating players. And I hope that if it is indeed the day that Kyle Lowry departs, that that goodwill, that change perception of a lot of American-born players about Toronto is now something. It's all, listen, we're never going to be the Lakers or the Knicks because it's LA or New York. That's fine. But it still can be a destination in the same way that hey, when LeBron's playing in Cleveland, everybody wants to play in Cleveland. When San Antonio is winning, everybody wants to play in San Antonio. It's not just about population. It's just about perception. And hopefully an icon like Lowry leaving doesn't change that. And it comes across of this is all about Lowry chasing a last contract than it is an organization that's cutting loose of an icon.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, another thing to mention just about the Toronto connection, and I think what players see really attractive about Toronto as a destination is that it's a place where you don't need to kind of pay your dues and wait and bide your time and have the early part of your career be eclipsed by a big superstar because you don't necessarily yet fit into the mix and fit into what the team is looking to develop. So, you know, Scottie Barnes is going to get substantial minutes this season, and you probably won't be able to say the same thing for every single rookie that was drafted this year because, you know, you've seen it. We saw it last year. I mean, it was a real all hands on deck situation in Tampa. But, you know, we got to see Greg Malachi minutes, Greg Gary Trent Jr. minutes. We got to see Greg Ken Birch minutes. Like, we saw all these guys come and it like immediately make a meaningful impact on the team. So I think that's quite attractive too, because Toronto means you're going to come and you're going to play and you're going to be relied upon. And you're coming here to work. And I do think that that appeals to not every player, but of a really specific type of player that Toronto has carved out a niche for.
So what do you think, Katie, presuming Lowry does leave, and we'll see if it's a sign and trade, the value. I know it's a really arbitrary question to ask now, but it certainly merits. What's the shopping list? What's the need here for this team? I mean, there's still Siakam and Freddie and OG. The nucleus is good. You still have Nick Nurse. You still have Masai in the front office, at least for now. So the stability is there. The pieces are in place. You have the fourth overall pick, a defensive player, but nothing wrong with that whatsoever. What's next, do you think, after this goes down?
I mean, I would like to see some attention to that size deficit we saw last season. I'd love to see the team bring Ken back. He was a real difference maker, though he did have a short window to be that difference maker. I'd love to see what that looks like with a lot longer runway. If this is the case that we're talking around, that, you know, Lowry goes to Miami and Dragic comes to Toronto, which I'm worried for Goran Dragic if he does, because for so long he has been an enemy of Toronto Raptors fans. So we'll see if that works. But, you know, I think, as we talked about earlier too, Fred is obviously going to be the guy in terms of being your PG. Is Malachi your backup? Sure. But I wonder if they don't look at the rest of the free agent market, because, you know, it's a huge field this season. I think you're looking at veterans, you know, like your Lou Williams, as well as DeMar DeRozan on the market. You're also looking at you kind of role players like Alex Caruso, Tim Hardaway Jr., John Collins, like these. It's a very interesting free agency. And I think the team that does best, and I think Toronto could fit in there, is the team that kind of picks and chooses some of these role player style players and does well there, rather than, you know, kind of blowing it all on one or two of the big stars that are really available. And those stars are probably just going to sign back to the teams that they've declined options from. They're just looking for a little bit more security. So, I mean, I would love to see Toronto bring Gary Trent Jr. back. I mentioned Kem already. So I think, and like Yuta Watanabe as well. Like there's a lot of guys that we saw flashes and flourishes from last season. And, you know, you and I talked at length about it, that it wasn't exactly the fairest measuring stick of a season to look at playmaking with. So I hope we get to see some of them back, and we get to see them make some more substantial contributions back in Toronto.
Well, you're absolutely right about the top of the list. Players like Kawhi and Chris Paul winding up with the other teams, and a lot of the top-tier free agents may wind up re-signing. So how much activity do you think we see tonight? Are we going to have one of those nights where there's all kind of stuff happening in the NBA, or is this going to be a little bit of a process, Katie?
Oh, God. You know, every summer I think I'm ready for it, and every summer I am wrong. I definitely unravel much quicker than I anticipate. But it does strike me that we'll see some of these really big deals get done very quickly. I do think Lowry is going to be one of them, whether that's with the Heat, which is what it looks like. That makes, the more I think about it, the more that does make sense to me. You know, we talked about it being a necessary measure of security for a contract there. But I also don't mind, get, you know, mad at the guy for wanting to move someplace where he can golf all year round or ring chase, though I don't think that's exactly what he's doing. I think we'll probably see, I'm very curious to see where DeMar DeRozan ends up if the Spurs don't re-sign him. Patty Mills is another player that I think could wind up being super meaningful if someone can pull him away from the Spurs. Jared Allen, he's a player I would very selfishly love to see on Toronto. I don't know if the cap space can make that work. You know, we're going to get to see our beloved Norman Powell likely get a payday with the Blazers. I think this is going to be one of those free agency situations where just when you kind of heave a sigh of relief and think, okay, all the big trades are done and out of the way, something else is just going to come and totally like hit, like take you out of the knees.
Yeah, there is always a surprise. It doesn't matter the sport or the free agency period. There's no doubt. Finally, before we let you go, Katie, we've seen the impact of returning to Toronto has made on the Blue Jays already. And I know they beat up on a pretty bad Kansas City team, but at the end of the day, the emotion of the players to be back home finally is something. And we haven't talked about it a lot because there has been no developments, obviously, with the Raptors and the Leafs. I mean, the Leafs were back home, but in front of no fans. But for the Raptors, come October, fingers crossed and everything crossed that, you know, we are back to some degree of normalcy, that is going to make such a pronounced difference for this franchise, 100%. But it's worth repeating, Katie, this team is, just like the other Toronto teams, has not played in front of its home fans. And like the Jays, they haven't been in their own country. And if Kyle Lowry is one, and other players are saying they miss driving on the Gardner, by the way, that'll end in about 30 seconds. They won't mind miss driving on the Gardner once they're back on the Gardner, presuming it's open. But you know the psychological impact and boost this franchise is going to get just being home, for heaven's sakes.
Absolutely. And I mean, you also think about it as a lot of the, I mean, if we're looking at potentially what, like 70, maybe 65% of the team has not yet even played in Toronto, has not had that experience. You know, they were, they've only known the Tampa Raptors, which is a dark thing to say for them. So I love the idea, you know, that so many of these new faces, and Scotty Barnes being one of them, you know, they think they've maybe felt some fan appreciation and love from afar. When they get in front, you know, even if we're looking at lower numbers in the arena, when they still get in front of fans in the arena within that space, the atmosphere is going to be out of control. Also, because I think fans are just so deprived of that experience of just seeing this team play in person. So the energy, I for one hope to be there, but the energy is going to be, you know, off the charts and out of control. And it is something that does give me goosebumps a little bit when I think about it. So it's going to be a huge difference maker.